We got a big one today. Big, big one this afternoon. George Springer making his debut on Overdrive at 6:05. We look forward to catching up with George in just over 2 hours. We've got the Wheel of Misfortune in about 90 minutes. So two big items to look forward to. And access to some audio that I think might be included in the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame. I do.
Yeah, well, you have to take a step back, and you have to remember where you were if you're old enough in 72 when Henderson scored, where you were in 2010 when Crosby scored. Is there anything else? Lanny McDonald, OT winner versus the Islanders.
Yep. Gretzky to Lemieux maybe in 87. Might be close. You know, might be on a short list. Maybe Sakic icing it in 02. That was a big call. Remember Bob
when
Cole?
Mario between the legs let it go to Sakic and he ripped it home?
That was Paul Kariya, I think, that scored that goal, didn't he? Sakic was the one coming off the wing to make it 5-2, I believe. And I just remember Bob Cole basically saying, that's it. Like, it's over. And, I mean, there's been so many great calls. Touch 'em all, Joe. That's a big one here in the city. I think the whole country probably can relate to Joe Carter hitting that bomb in 93. And
anyway, this one is right up there, and I can't wait till the fans hear this.
Okay.
It's legendary.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant.
We'll play it at some point this afternoon. It's very anticipated audio. I think it's anticipated. No one's ever heard of it before, and,
exactly.
And no one expected it to happen. So
that's not tied to your tweet, is it? Oh, like you tweeted something this afternoon.
No, I just let everybody know, Jamie, that like Curt Schilling, I am withdrawing my name from the Hockey Hall of Fame. I will not be a participant, and I'm no longer eligible.
That I could see that kind of storming the nation here. I could see a lot of people that have no shot at making the Hall of Fame.
That was the joke, obviously. I have no shot, so who cares?
Right. And Schilling, there's an element of that is so weak, too. I'm kind of disturbed by the whole scene, the whole story. And I'm not a Schilling guy. I don't follow him on Twitter. I couldn't care less what Curt Schilling has to say.
Dude, regardless of what you think about him, he is a Hall of Famer. Sorry.
Yeah, on the field, he's absolutely a Hall of Famer. And those are what the votes are, I believe, supposed to be about. I think what needs to happen with Hall of Fames is, and specifically this one with Cooperstown, because there's so many different writers that have votes, it's on Cooperstown to issue a new objective here, where I would go to the writers and say, you are the experts because you've been covering the game, you've been around the clubs, you know what's up. You vote specifically on the field of play.
Exactly.
You tell us, is that ball player worthy of being in the Hall of Fame? And then if you want a secondary level of, you know, fretting or going over every detail, allow that to happen at Cooperstown. You know, put together a panel of three people, and this is someone we don't want to be associated with for whatever reason. This is someone we are willing to be associated with. But when you put it in the hands of individual baseball writers and reporters.
And how many, Brian?
We're talking hundreds of people that have votes.
It's too many. How about shrink the panel? And no disrespect to anyone that covers baseball or writes for baseball, but hundreds of people is too many. Form a group of former players, much like hockey does. I think there's former players, there's executives, male, female, and get a group of 15 or 20 people, and they decide who goes in the Baseball Hall of Fame. End of story.
Yeah, I could see that. I think what they were thinking is the more you have in there, the more diluted the outliers are. Like, you know, if you have people that go on based on person's character and intangibles and stuff like that, things that maybe could be controversial one way or the other, those people get weeded out because they're on emotion. They're not on the facts. Don't you think that's why they have so many?
Yeah, it's historically been, if you're on the beat for a certain amount of time, if you're in the Baseball Writers Association, if you're a card-carrying baseball writer for a certain amount of years, you're in. And I believe you can hold on to it for a long time, even if you've moved on to covering football or hockey or whatever. Every Hall of Fame has a different vetting process. Right, in voting process. And this is what I was getting to yesterday when I said ultimately the sanctity of it all is just outrageous and ridiculous. Like, it's not the equivalent of a Nobel Peace Prize. It's not the equivalent of voting, you know, politically for a mayor or premier or prime minister or president. Right. You know, the career's happened. The guy's either a Hall of Famer or not. And if his plaque is up in Cooperstown or in Toronto or, you know, in Springfield, Massachusetts, whatever. You know,
right.
Yeah, like even if you thought Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens was the biggest a-hole on earth, does it really bother you that much that he's getting a plaque up in Cooperstown?
But that's it. Wow. And now it's on these voters to take the moral high ground and determine what is right and what is wrong. And it's a slippery slope because there are a lot of – I understand a lot of people look at a guy like Schilling and say, I just can't do it. I don't like him. I don't agree with him. But what if it's on the other end of the spectrum? What right. if a writer's like, I can't vote for this player because – he's a Democrat that did this, and I won't do it. Like then, right. then you're like, wait a minute. Like it's, and I know Schilling's an extreme example because of right. some of the stuff that he's been spewing and going on about. But that's why I would just take that element out of the voting altogether. Just go to the writers and say, tell me whether or not you think the ball player is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration during his time playing. If you want more beyond that. Then well, allow the hall to pick out two or three people on a committee and say, Brian, you want to be associated with this
I'll give
person.
You a little closer-to-home example, and maybe it's to a lesser degree. Theron Fleury. Theron Fleury out west is a very hot-button topic because I don't know if you see on Twitter. I don't follow him on Twitter, but he's – you know, he's a very
I've seen him pop
outspoken
up a
guy.
Times.
You yep. know, he's outspoken,
yep.
Not a Trudeau fan, blah, blah, blah. But – he's also had a checkered past, too. But if you looked at Theron Fleury, the hockey player, you know, there's a pretty good case for him to be, you know, at the next level, put it that way. But, you know, there's Theron Fleury. Like, a lot of times people look at the whole package, right? They're not just looking at the body of work.
Which and, I understand because we're all human. You right. know, this is why the idea of objective journalism, to me, is an impossibility. Like, it just, I've never believed in it completely. I think you have certain journalists that can go further down the road than others, certain journalists that can somehow truly bury their biases or their subjectivity. But you're humans, you know, like you're going to have a bias. You're going to have a viewpoint that maybe you're going to apply to your reporting or your opinions or your voting. And
right.
I get that it's complicated. And I get that you're dealing with people that you don't like or you don't agree with or you feel like can do some damage on whatever platform they might have.
I know, but it's almost like the voters have to be sat down individually where I look at Brian Hayes face to face and say, this player right here, in that 15-year span, is that player a Hall of Famer? Give you no time to think about it or figure out how much you hate the guy. Because when you look at Theo Fleury's body work, I think he's a guy's a Hall of Famer. Extremely
right.
unique talent. I think it's a Hall of Fame talent.
But
people
know,
are like, they get time to think about it, and they get a couple days. Oh, do I like that guy? Was he drinking too much? Was he in rehab? Blah, blah. That has nothing to do with anything anyway.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean,
but apparently it does.
It does. That's human nature.
And that's right? human nature. And again, I would say Schilling looks equally, maybe not equally, it's apples and oranges, but he looks pretty weak here too. Like, I'm going to take my ball and go home.
They rejected it.
Yeah, he's still going to be on the ballot, and he's not going to get any votes next year. Like, guys will just be like, fine, if you don't want in, we're not putting you in.
I know, we should put this to bed, but I thought about this morning. What if this guy took a complete 180? I think this would be a fascinating case study. If Curt Schilling woke up today and went on the apology tour, whether he was genuine or not, and for 1 year was like, you know what, I needed to be better. I'm sorry for some of the things that I've said. And I'm a staunch that. And went on the complete apology tour. I think he would make it into the Hall of Fame.
He might, as like a redemption project for voters would be
but
like, there you go,
But then people would
Kurt.
Be like, you know what, he was a Hall of Famer. And you know what, he's asked for forgiveness, so I'm going to – like, that would be a fascinating case study for me.
It would be. That's so outrageous, the idea that Curt Schilling needs the forgiveness of a baseball writer.
You're preaching to the choir.
It's outrageous to think that voters actually believe, you know, he owes them something based on their level of integrity
right.
or how they go about their lives. But, you know, that's the position that we find ourselves in. And Right. You know, the Hall isn't putting anyone in. No one's going in 2021. And right. I guess we'll carry over the conversation to next year. Scott Mitchell will join us in about 15 minutes because Springer was unveiled via Zoom today. Like, generally, he'd be down at the Dome, up in town. He'd be putting the jersey on, and he'd be doing the tours. He'd be in studio everywhere. Not the case. But George will join us in a couple of hours. We'll catch up with Springer at 6:05, Scotty Mitchell in about 15 minutes. The Leafs take 4 points in regulation. You know, that's kind of the way you got to view it, right? It's almost like it's not just, hey, you got 2 points. It's you got four in regulation over the course of three nights against a divisional rival in Calgary. And it was a weird game. You know, that first period was one of the best periods they've ever played. Like, they were spectacular, and Calgary was just asleep. Yeah. And then it flipped, and it was the weirdest second period. And the third was just kind of, you know, it was just kind of there. That's not in-depth analysis, but I didn't think either team looked spectacular in the third. But the Leafs got the job done, just like they did on Sunday. And
hard to – sorry to interrupt. That's twice I've interrupted you. I apologize. It's hard to criticize a win. That's you know, ultimately, I said that today on Leaf Lunch. Like, there's things that you can take from it and go, you know what, you know, our goalie was really good here. You know, we could do clean up some stuff. But, you know, going on the road in Alberta against division rivals right now, and it's still early in the season. There's still 50 games to play for the most part. But, you know, it's a good investment, you know, and that's what you built from that. Put it that way. Instead of, you know, going, hey, you could have done this, could have done that. You know, there was lots of things to clean up, but I thought there were some really great efforts. I thought Freddie Anderson was great.
Yep.
I thought Marner and Matthews were great. I thought, you know, people are talking about Willie Nylander. He was quiet. He looked quiet. He looked quiet both games for
quiet
me.
Quiet guys on both sides. Like, I thought outside of after the final whistle blew, I didn't know Matthew Tkachuk was dressed last night.
Tkachuk had one chance in the second period. Outside of that, I thought he was going to be a huge storyline last night. Like, I just, you know, that set up for, like, the villain, and this guy was going to be kind of everything.
Which he thrives on a lot.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
What he brings to the table.
He did not have a good night. But he didn't factor in last night. I thought, I don't know, where do you guys stand on that? I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Where do you guys stand on that?
I think it comes back to what Jeff Ward said a couple of days ago. If it's anyone else, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Right.
And if it's anyone else, I'd probably have a more explosive viewpoint because Muzzin knew exactly what he was doing.
Sure.
And Leaf fans wouldn't like it if someone did that to your player. But there's maybe two or three guys in the league that would get that treatment. One of them is Matthew Tkachuk. The other one might be Brad Marchand. Like, it's just – that's what it was. Muzzin knew exactly what he was doing.
Outraged after the game. It's not the Quebec Pee Wee tournament for crying out loud. Like, but it was a little flip of the puck, and Tkachuk kind of lost it, and there was a couple punches thrown. Like, big deal.
I agree.
Just, I don't know. People were like, oh, that's classless, whatever. It's like, get lost.
But here's the thing. From the outside, I saw the craziness of two markets in 2 days.
I saw
the craziness on the Toronto side, where, you know, he was kneeing Jack Campbell in the neck and blah, blah, blah. And then last night, the craziness of the Calgary market where he had and both, like, there were people in the media who, you know, cheer for the team openly. Same thing last night. Calgary media, you know, gutless, blah. I can't remember what the
A league that has almost zero animosity on a nightly basis, like, at least give it a little bit of jam, spice up the. Like, there are some weird stretches of the games where you're like, you don't see any fans. Like, there were some stretches last night where either team could kind of get a shot on net. It was nobody in the building. And you're like, is this a scrimmage of some sort? And then it would, like, pick up and somebody would score a goal. And you're like, okay, that's NHL hockey. And then there'd be a segment where it's like, man, this is garbage.
Yeah.
And then
it
picks up.
If we didn't go through the bubble, we would be talking a lot more about how awkward it can feel at times during a game because it does without fans and it's just a completely different atmosphere. But I think we've become used to it, and we've gone through the ringer now for about 6-7 months of sports without fans.
Right.
But I think there is a difference, I would say, between the flipping of a puck and the Tkachuk falling on a guy. You know, that falling on a guy can be more dangerous. Flipping a puck
is
never going to do anything.
Absolutely.
But I will also say, because I saw some people like, wow, Tkachuk, loose cannon. I'm not sure there's a player in the league that wouldn't react to that. Like, I think everyone would get up and say, did you just shoot a puck at me and go and punch a guy in the head? Like, and I think if you didn't, your coach, at least in a certain era, would be like, are you insane? What are you doing? Like, how do you – we just lost the game and a guy flipped the puck at you, which is a sign of whether it's disrespect or, hey, I'm sending a message to you. Kachuk reacted the way I would expect 99% of players would react. I have no issue with him getting up and going at Muzzin. I fully expect that he should and that he would.
I
don't know if
honest.
It carries over. Like, I thought a couple of nights ago might carry over. It didn't. And maybe the reason was that the Leafs looked at it and said, listen, if we can keep this guy sleeping, that's going to benefit us.
Yeah, and he must get a little sick of it, just like Wayne Simmonds might in Toronto. Matthew Tkachuk is going to be like, does anyone else want to contribute to creating some intensity on this hockey team? I know there's Lucic there, and he never mails anything in, but he's got to be like, okay, I'm the one that's got to rile up the goaltender. I got to stand up to somebody. Like, it seems like he's out in an island. It's like, every time there's something got to rev up the team, it's got to be me every time. That gets old, man. That gets really old
for
that
right.
guy.
You're right. I think, Brian, you're on to something, too. If we weren't so used to bubble hockey, so used to kind of just settling into what we're watching right now, I think we would critique a lot more. I think we would, like, I know it's early in the season, so you're kind of early in the season habits where it's very loose, the intensity, like, the schedule is going to factor in. Whether we like it or not, we're going to see the legs fall off a team or you know, not where you're playing four games in 6 nights or 5 and 7. Like, it's going to happen just based on these guys being human and have a lot of games bunched together. But I think we're just kind of accepting what's in front of us because that's what they're putting forth. And you know, for the most part, I think it's very entertaining.
Yeah,
there are some.
I love that they're back.
There's some pockets. Yeah, there's some pockets where you're like, yeah, this isn't great hockey. This isn't, you know, this isn't what I would expect out of division rivals and stuff. But it's not there. I thought about this morning. So Ottawa plays in Vancouver 3 times in a row. I would have liked to see Toronto one more game in there.
I was just about to say the same thing. It's like, if they were playing again tonight, a back-to-back, or tomorrow, you'd be like, this could get very
because
interesting
tonight. Then you're like, okay, that feels like a playoff series.
Right.
Like, 2 back-to-backs spaced out in 3 days, I get it. But if there's a third one lumped in, you're like, okay, now.
That goes a long way.
It does go a
long way. And they're still
establishing
the cross, you know, the division.
Yeah, the
you know,
cross
coming together.
Country.
Yeah, cross country part of it. Like, Toronto and Montreal have what they have. Toronto and Ottawa has what they have. Edmonton and Calgary does.
Right.
You can't expect Toronto and Calgary to immediately realize, hey, we've got a longstanding rivalry here when they just simply haven't, based on geography and Eastern Conference versus Western Conference. I think it can and will get there on a number of different occasions throughout not only this division, every division in the league.
I'll tell you what, I watched Pitt Boston last night. I felt like I was watching the KHL.
Really?
I was just like, I'm so tuned into the Canadian division. That's what I'm dialed in on every night. I was like, Bob, Boston Pitt. That's interesting.
Yeah,
and you're just
different.
Seeing some different names floating around. And
yeah, I've on purpose really tried to focus on south of the border just to see. You know, I watch Colorado. You know, I've watched L.A. play, but watched Arizona. Like, I've actually, like, sat down and said, you know what? Regardless of how I feel right now, I'm going to watch this game because I want to see what's happening in the rest of the league. Mm-hmm. There are some – it's not just north of the border. There's some periods and some stretches where you're
course.
Like, yeah, man, you know, like even Florida, for example. Nobody thinks that Florida's 3-0 because they haven't played any games.
Yeah.
They've literally – they've been shut down for COVID because of themselves, and then Carolina got shut down, and that was Florida, their opponent. Like, it's kind of crazy that some teams have played 8 games, some have played 3. Now, it's all going to catch up to each other, but it's just a weird dynamic right now, and I think we're just in that Canadian bubble, so we're not really paying attention too much at what's going on kind of south of the border.
Yeah, and that's natural, and listen, we're dealing with a Canadian audience, too.
We're
not being streamed on the NHL Network or anything like that,
no.
So we cater to an audience up here in Toronto and throughout Ontario and throughout the country, for that matter. But big stories will be addressed, like the one in Pittsburgh today. We'll get to this later in the afternoon. But their GM, Jim Rutherford, your boy-o, resigned out of nowhere today. And he was your GM in Hartford and Carolina forever, and he's won 2 cups in Pittsburgh. And he makes moves all the time, and he's out. And he, I guess, issued his resignation earlier today. It caught the whole hockey world by surprise.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that a little bit later this afternoon. And furthermore, you know, how desirable that job is compared to where it was like 12 or 13 years ago. It was the number one job in hockey.
Yeah,
like
it's prime real estate.
Prime real estate. You got Sid, Gino, Stahl, Flower, you know, all these guys.
I don't even know if I want that gig right now.
It's a very different viewpoint now when you look at Pittsburgh. Like it just is the age. You know, they haven't been so great the last couple of years. They're in a tough division this year. I'm not sure they're going to get in. I mean, they're going to have to really fight and claw to be a top four team in that division. Tristan Jarry has not looked great. You know, you put your chips in on Jarry, and he has not looked great so far this year. So we'll get into that a little bit later this afternoon. Don't forget George Springer at 6:05, the Wheel of Misfortune at 5:30, and the Raptors in action tonight. Siakam and OG Anunoby are questionable for the game. If both of them are out and Giannis is in town,
that's not good.
That is not going to be
fun. Dude, they haven't been so you-know-what crap hot either.
No.
No, you're
right. Milwaukee
you're
hasn't been.
They're
Milwaukee
like
10-7
or something, 10-6.
Right. They're on their pace on pace for 70 wins a year ago. Yeah. And that doesn't appear to be the case this year. So they are definitely making adjustments. They are not the powerhouse that we assumed they would be and they were a year ago. But we'll get to that game a little bit later this afternoon as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
Hazy, how is your new rig on your back? Because I have just standard dinner chair. And it's garbage. My back is garbage.
That's what I was sitting on for 10 months, man. I just.
But I know you got that. You said your wife didn't like it or something, and you stole it. But is it comfortable? Like, do you?
It's
I know yesterday you were leaning back numerous times.
You did have the lean a few
you
times.
Were
like,
doing...
I have to lean down pat. Like, I sit back and lean. The only problem I feel. Dr. Evil. The only thing is I lean back and people can see that I have some TV, like I have Overdrive on the TVs across from me, so you can see the reflection in the picture.
But Noodles, this guy's been leaning forward, almost his eyeballs right in front of the camera for a year and a half. Yeah, that was
you had the lean.
Year.
I've been really close.
Is that a dentist chair?
No, this is just I don't know. You stand. I don't know what they call it—a manager's chair or something,
Like,
which I think is somewhat inappropriate. Why label it the manager's chair?
Manager's chair.
Yeah,
wow.
It seems a little bit extreme. It's a lazy boy or whatever.
The captain's chair.
The captain's
like
chair.
That.
That's what it's called, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Yes, there's a little bit of a lean, which is a spectacular new feature.
There you are right there. It's like your golden move. It's so beautiful.
I was too comfortable. I noticed it in the 6 p.m. hour yesterday. We had dregs on, and I started just rambling. I think I was mumbling. I don't think I was even, like, enunciating properly as a broadcaster. And I'm like, snap out of it. Like, sit up and realize that you're on TV. But the bigger concern is, and this is the one where you just kind of lose it. When you're doing radio and we just get caught up in our thoughts and we're going back and forth, is I got the swivel. And the swivel
the turn
is very distracting, I think, if you're watching on TV. I think it would be
it's
very
like
bothersome
for
people.
You're not closing a stock deal with some guy in Switzerland wheeling around in your chair.
It is, though. I mean, I think people at home who watch us and listen to us, they understand. Like, sitting in a chair for 3 hours – like, you're going to move. You're going to be uncomfortable. Like, people have sent notes like, oh, you were drinking SodaStream, 2 weeks ago? Like, what's
in
the SodaStream?
The lava lamp.
Yeah, people send me notes like, what's in my water? I always put in, like, Tang or, you know, the calorie-free ones, whatever those are. Like, Crystal Light. It's Crystal Light. Like, but we're at home, even though this is our setting. This is what I think makes our show very comfortable is that we are comfortable.
Like, yes. I think comfort is a priority. Has to be. And they're better than, like, the chairs in our studio are not bad, but we've had some issues with them over the years.
Yes.
Right? Like, some of them, they don't move properly. Some of them won't. Like, if you can't get the suspension and you can't raise your chair or lower your chair,
it's awkward.
It's very awkward being on TV where someone is completely out of whack with the, you know, the lineage of the room.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully, Megan has us locked in on the camera angles, and she knows what works and what doesn't. But to answer your question, it is remarkably comfortable, and I feel very good in this chair. I am concerned, though, that it's going to be almost too comfortable, and I'm just, you know, I'm going to start swearing or something, and it's like, whoa, relax here. Like, we're still working.
I had a dream last night that I felt like I had Pete Rose on the show. Like I've had three kind of late nights in a row where I've, you know, done some color and SC nights and that. So it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was still awake last night and I don't know why I was looking out the window and I'm like, oh, I just need to sleep. And went to sleep, was up early this morning. And I said to myself, like, I think there's a chance if I don't have a nap, which I didn't get to today, I was too busy. At some point, there's a chance that we all could have.
Someone's going to fall asleep.
Someone fall asleep.
It, like on Pete air? Rose. Yeah, it's happened on air. Mike Francesa fell asleep on the fan down in New York.
He challenged that, though, did he not?
Was out like a light, dude. He can challenge all he wants, and of course he did. He came firing back, and so will I. When I fall asleep, I could be snoring, like sawing off Zeds for an hour and a half, and I will claim that I was awake the whole time.
That's not.
You can't admit that you fell asleep. Like, it's an absolute must where you got
to
blow back.
I almost find that impossible to fall asleep while broadcasting. The one thing that I cannot do, if I've gone for too long, like, I find it difficult if I do a late game, 10 o'clock start. The next day, I find that I'm garbage. I don't know why. And I've only found that normal talking becomes difficult. But falling asleep, man, that I don't even see that possible.
It's tough.
Like, Hayes, if you were out till 3 in the morning and then teed it up early in the morning and you did the show, you think you could honestly fall asleep on this show?
No, I don't think I could. I mean, you never know where we're going. Listen, I can fall asleep. I fell asleep in class sometimes, like in high school. Like, and that's a rarity. There are many kids that would do that. I could find a way to fall asleep, but it wasn't something that I tried to do. It's not something that I would avoid it at all costs. I can't picture myself falling asleep. Like, I cannot picture on the air. Mike's on, you guys here. The crazy thing about Francesa is he was a solo show.
Right.
Like, it's one thing if you had a cast of characters and you were a guy that just kind of chimed in and, you know, you join the conversation and then it's kind of like I'm out for the next 7 or 8 minutes and you're doing a morning show and you're on no sleep. Like, I guess maybe you could fall asleep.
See, I
maybe
could see
on the air.
That's these morning shows like Carlo and Michael and them, like they, you know, they're up at 4:30 or whatever time. I have no idea. I think they're up at 4:30. Like, what time?
Yeah,
do you,
about
would you
that.
Get up?
Especially when they're going into the studio. Maybe not now. You know, they probably get up at 5:20, 5:30. But they're like the Leafs are on the West Coast. You're probably watching that game until 12:30.
That's what I mean. You're
Carlo, on 3 or 4 hours of sleep.
You're watching that game, or Michael, and then you get up early. Like, I think there would be pockets, especially if you're in a situation, the three of us, and say, Hayes, you're, you know, are we allowed to say Larry Kinging it again?
That's out of respect. Like, we pay homage to the great Larry King.
Right, okay. So if you've got a Larry King going, and O and I are going baby monkey. Like, I think there's a chance. Like, there would be a slight chance where you're kind of like zoned out.
I think one of you two could potentially be a sleep candidate on this show. I think one of you two. I'm not going to name names.
If I did the morning show, I would mandatory play a pre-tape, or I'd play an interview we did from the night before every day for half an hour, and I'd shut it down.
See, I'd have a tough time.
How are you going to get up in time? Like, how many alarms are you going to have? Like,
I just need one alarm. I could tell myself to get up in 15 minutes and my mental alarm clock 15 minutes.
That's not, that can't be true, man.
That can't be true.
That just can't be true. Like, the mental clock, the body clock, you're Kramer. Like, that's what happened with Jean-Paul, and he was going to wake him up and he fell asleep. He hit snooze.
For
he was late
most
for the race.
Part, there's been maybe 5 occasions where I'm just like blown by it and I'm gone. Because I'll be gone for a long time.
Yeah, you go into hibernation for a few hours.
For the most part, I could say, wake up in 10 minutes. I wake up.
That's impressive.
Do you not go on golf trips where you say, set your alarm for 5 a.m. and at 4:58, you're just wide awake?
Yes. Yeah. That's in anticipation. That's a level of excitement.
That's how excited I get for work every day.
Okay. Full credit to you then. I like it. That's a skill, man. If you could pull that off. Like, that's a pretty good talent. If you could fall asleep and know exactly when you're going to wake up, that probably would go a long way.
My brother has that skill where he's never had an alarm clock, but he would wake up at 6 a.m. He's just like, I'm telling myself I wake up at 6 a.m. And his body clock gets...
That's impressive, man. It's a robot.
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous. Programmed.
Until the time it doesn't work.
That's
the
concern. At some point it won't, and then what's your explanation? Like, imagine speaking to... a person in charge and saying, I'm telling you, for 30 years I woke up and I just didn't.
Because when you don't wake up, everyone's like, you were gooned or you were doing something stupid.
And... Yeah. Or you'd say, how hard was it to set your phone alarm?
Like, good for you that you have that talent. That's very impressive. But why didn't you also set an alarm for this very important appointment or the flight you were supposed to catch? Like, what are you trying to prove?
Remember the Seinfeld episode? The guy, like, slept through the runner?
Yeah, Jean-Paul, that's what I'm saying. Kramer said that he's got the body clock alarm.
Yeah.
And he slept right through it. And then Jerry's like, what happened? He's like, I hit snooze. I fell back asleep.
It's ridiculous.
And Jean-Paul was late for the race. He still ended up winning that race somehow.
So funny.
All right, George Springer at 6:05. Scotty Mitchell, I think, is asleep right now. We're trying to call Scott and get to the bottom of this Zoom presser from earlier today and Marcus Semien coming aboard, what it means for the Blue Jays. And I think Scotty Mitchell just shut the mill down, basically.
Wow. Maybe he's been...
He's a busy guy.
Scotty Mitchell, though, he's our guy. Like, what's... I know. He's blowing us off? Or what's
might
the
have
deal?
The,
ghosting
he,
us.
He might have the do not disturb on your phone. Like, when I do interviews or whatever, you put that on.
It's 2021, man. I don't care. Do not... your phone rings. Like...
But not
especially
if you put
if you've
a do not disturb
to the
on.
Hit. Why would he put a do not disturb when he knows we're calling him at 425?
That's true. Like, that's not... something I factored in. Like, he's already got that in his schedule.
That
like, you're supposed to be on with overdrive.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, like, if I'm doing a hit, I'll put on do not disturb, and it'll go right to voicemail if somebody wants to call. But I'm already on the hit. I'm already doing something.
You've picked up the phone when the grapplers called you or Mullen or whatever.
Exactly.
Anyway, we'll see if we can get Scotty on a little bit later on. Ray Ferraro will join us in about a half an hour. We'll get into this Jim Rutherford stepping down in Pittsburgh story, what it means for the Penguins, maybe how it came about, what it means for his future. I mean, he's not exactly a young guy, but he's a Hall of Fame executive, and he's won cups, and he's generally where he goes, you know, they start moving in the right direction. So I guess he's a free agent as of today. So we'll tell you more about it. We'll get into it. We've got some audio we want to touch on here. We want to play, and we want to basically invite the world into this new piece of audio. It is gold. It is just a great sports moment. It's one you're never going to forget.
And, yes.
We're going to play that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, James Duffy will join us in 25 minutes. We'll catch up with JD, get his take on the Leaf game last night. The Leafs with another win in regulation, and they're off to a very good start, 6-2 on the season. They're dealing with some injuries. You know, we'll talk a little bit about the depth. That fourth line actually played a fair amount of minutes last night, and Keith gave them an opportunity. Mikko Lehtinen, on the other hand, started with a bunch of minutes and slowly just kind of evaporated. Like, he just wasn't a part of the program by the third period.
I want to see where you guys are at with him. Like, he looks heavy-footed to me.
He's not a great skater. He looks like he's just a half step too slow right now.
And I thought he looked fine, to be honest with you. I don't know what you guys – we had a group text messaging. I have – not on the same page.
You liked what you saw on the game tape last night.
Wow.
I did not see what I was reading from some...
An extreme comparison.
That was an extreme comparison.
It
correct.
Wasn't meant to be taken literally.
I thought the kid was fine. Let's continue on with Scotty Mitch.
Okay, James Duffy in about 20. George Springer in about an hour and a half. Here's our Blue Jays reporter, Scott Mitchell. What's happening, Scotty?
Not too much. I'm sorry, fellas. I'm very aware of not being a scrum buster, so my phone is on silent a little too often, and apparently at key times as well.
Yeah, that's
Scotty,
fine.
I mean, like, it's still the number pops up. Like, come on.
No, when it's on silent, it does. It's just a black phone just sitting beside me. It doesn't speak to me. It allows me to get my work done, and then sometimes I look at it and say, "Uh-oh, forgot about that."
So do those rules apply to, like, a Zoom call? Like, what? You're not in the scrum, so what's the deal with that?
I'm just very aware of my phone just going off at all. I don't like it going off at the grocery store. I just want to feel a slight buzz, and sometimes a slight buzz isn't enough.
I like it. Hey, listen, I support that. I'm not a Ring guy either. Like, I never have my Ring on, and I miss a ton of calls as a result. So it's all good. So you were there, or I guess you were, you know, online for the Zoom reveal of George Springer, which is very 2021. And Ross was there, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. Is there anything in particular that came out of it that you felt was the most newsworthy, you know, piece of information that Blue Jay fans should know?
Well, look, I think, you know, people kind of look at this from a baseball sense and say, look, the Blue Jays needed a center fielder. You know, you can always have you can never have enough bats, especially one of George Springer's caliber. But it's really just how good of a fit this guy was in every scenario, no matter how you looked at it. And when you look at this Blue Jays club, there's clearly a lot of offensive talent. There's clearly a lot of infield talent. It was very clear that center field was a hole. When you can add a guy who hits 35 home runs and gets on base, from a skills perspective, that exactly fits what the Blue Jays want. They want a guy who didn't strike out a whole lot, a guy who has professional at-bats, a guy who's able to get on base, because they do have a whole lot of swing and miss in that lineup. So he fits from that perspective. And you could identify that as far back as last spring training, that George Springer was going to be that guy that they'd be in on. But when you look at what this team needs from a perspective of in the clubhouse, leadership-wise, he fits, you know, every single thing that they were looking for from that perspective, too. And everyone I've talked to that knows him from Houston, good dude, guy who is, you know, obviously accountable when he's in a slump and really doesn't ride the highs when he's hot. And when you look at where he's been and the experience he has in terms of winning a World Series and just being around a quality team for so long, it's just a seamless fit in every sense of the imagination. And when you add to that how healthy he's been and how his package of skills could age into that 35, 36-year range as you get to the back end of this deal, he's one of the safest investments on the market. And, you know, barring some sort of freak injury, you know, it's just perfect fit for the Blue Jays all around.
I believe it was Mark Shapiro who said that the heavy lifting is effectively done now, and they've done a lot of it. You know, you had Semi into the mix yesterday. We'll get to that momentarily. They pumped some money into the staff, into the bullpen. But as much as it has been a positive couple of weeks, and they are most certainly a better team today than they were a couple of weeks ago, I don't think I'm alone in looking at the staff and wondering if it's enough. So how should we perceive that, Scott, the fact that maybe this is effectively it? They might, you know, pick up another guy or two, kind of plug them in, but that would suggest to me Trevor Bauer's not in the mix anymore, and a significant trade that might add, you know, a guy who could be a top three or four option in your rotation may not be available to them right now, or something they're willing to seek out.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. I think you can definitely cross finally Trevor Bauer's name off that list. And that was always a kind of a pipe dream scenario to begin with. You know, once they signed Springer, it was just scenarios that could have been in play. And I think when you look at it, we've talked about the fact that this system is really primed for a blockbuster trade at some point. You know, you look at two guys on the market, Kyle Hendricks in Chicago, potentially Luis Castillo in Cincinnati. They would be, you know, great fits, but you got to give up a whole lot of prospect capital, and they do cost some money. And I don't think they're completely done yet. There is, you know, some room in the budget. I think, you know, one of these starters that's on the market, whether it's James Paxton, Jake Odorizzi, or Taiwan Walker, could be a possibility, especially if they're kind of relegated next month to, you know, say a one-year $12 million deal, something like that. I think the Blue Jays could fit that in. And you know, you're right, though. That's not the impact people are looking for. I think they will improve this rotation before they get to spring training, whenever that may be. But I think the real, you know, option for them, and I've talked about this a little bit over the winter, is you don't need to do everything right now. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, one smart baseball person said to me a long, long time ago was, you spend the first 2 months of a six-month season figuring out what you are, and you spend the next 2 months trying to go out and get what you need, and then you spend August and September playing baseball. And, you know, I really believe that the Blue Jays are a good enough roster and a good enough team to be able to go into the season, keep their head above water for the first half. And when I say head above water, you really just got to play over 500 baseball, especially if it's an expanded playoff situation again. And then you go into June and July, and, you know, as we do every year, there are aces on the market, there are players on the market. And I really think that's when the Blue Jays could address this top of the rotation and find someone to really pair with Hyunjin Ryu heading down the stretch going into the postseason.
Scotty, where do you think Nate Pearson will be in his development? Do you think there's a chance he could be dialed in and possibly be a guy that's you know, that up-and-coming stud where you don't even have to worry about another guy in the rotation, or is that kind of ahead of the, like, you know, down the road in the curve?
Yeah, I think we're a ways away from that, just based on, you know, the scenarios and the unfortunate part of him being able not to be able to get built up at this point. And, you know, you look at the 2019 season, he finally hit 100 innings. And obviously last year it was supposed to be another bump, and the pandemic got in the way. And then the elbow injury in August got in the way again. So, you know, he only threw 20 innings last year. So when you realistically think about what he could give you this year, you know, you look at that 100 inning benchmark again, maybe a little more, but you know, the flexor tendon, the flexor strain, you know, is worrisome. So you can't push the kid. You got to be able to keep him on a schedule and whatever he's comfortable with. So, you know, I think people looking at Nate Pearson as an impact rotation guy in 2021 are going to be severely disappointed. And it's not because, you know, anything's changed on the projection or anything. I just don't know that you can look at him as anything more than a guy at this point who's kind of fighting for a rotation spot, who will, you know, make starts at some point and potentially could be a multi-inning weapon out of the bullpen. I think when you look at the way this rotation is really stacking up right now, we are looking at piggyback situations. We're looking at Robbie Ray potentially followed by Nate Pearson, and you get three innings out of each of those guys. I really do think we're looking at creative scenarios just with the talent on this roster, the way it's constructed, and some of the innings, you know, limits and problems that every team across baseball is going to face. So piecing pitching together is going to be a day-by-day, week-by-week scenario for just about every team. And I think Nate Pearson's stuff is going to play a role, but he's going to be severely limited in what kind of bulk innings he can give them this season.
With Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, trying to kind of map it all out, I think certainly applies to the infield and where we see this going. And I know Ross mentioned today that Vladdy is still in contention for third base, and he's very excited to see what he's going to look like when he gets there. And I saw your response on Twitter, and I agree with it. I just don't see it being in the cards. But you bring Semien in. That's probably going to move Biggio around. I guess that means they're committed to Bichette at short, and I like that. I agree with that. I think that should be the play until, you know, something pops up like next year where there could be a boatload of just stud shortstops available for you to go out and pursue. But how do you see this all playing out? You know, if it's 162 games and everyone's healthy, do you see basically Vladdy at first, Biggio at third, and the rest is history? Or what is your projection on that?
Well, yeah, first of all, I mean, you know, Ross Atkins and the Blue Jays are saying all the right things publicly, and you don't want to take something off a kid's plate that he's willing to work for if you don't have to. But, I mean, part of reporting is reading the tea leaves and looking at, you know, the reality of the situation. And, you know, there's no first baseman on the roster. They haven't been tied to any first baseman. Rowdy Tellez isn't a long-term kind of option. He could work his way into at-bats and be a very productive player, but you know, there's a reason nobody's talked about first baseman on this team, because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is likely going to be that guy. And they just let him work through whatever he needed to work through this winter in terms of getting his head right, getting his body right, and potentially moving back to that spot. You look at the Winter League, obviously evidence that was clear for everyone to see, and, you know, you realize he's not a Major League third baseman, especially for a team that wants to contend. If this was 2 years ago and they had another year to let him run out there and be a 75-win team, sure, you could kick this down the road a little further, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to be a first baseman. Rowdy Tellez will be in that DH mix as well. The middle infield right now is completely set with Marcus Semien and Bo Bichette. And I agree with your assessment. Look, Bo Bichette has played 75 games in the big league, and this is essentially almost a tryout for him in 2021. If he looks good there, maybe the Blue Jays stay away from that deep free agent class next year. They've obviously looked at a ton of shortstops, so they're interested in improving that in that position. But when you look at Bichette, he's got 75 games under his belt. He will get 2021 to prove that he can stay at that position. Biggio will play a little third base. I think at this point, the picture is a little bit incomplete. I do think another kind of versatile player that can play a little bit of third, a little bit of outfield, you know, could be in the cards over the next couple of weeks that would kind of help clear up that picture a little bit. But, you know, I think when you look at this infield, it's really about those two up the middle players. And if Bo Bichette turns into what we expect and Marcus Semien can rebuild that value and put up a season like 2019, you know, this is going to be a really good offense. And, you know, wherever Vladimir Guerrero Jr. stands in the future, I really think he's on the verge of kind of clicking with the bat and really showing everyone, you know, why he was so hyped a couple of years ago.
Yep, I agree with you on that. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Scotty.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. And, yeah, there's going to be some movement, you know, for sure. And Biggio, I guess, is on the short end of it to an extent. I mean, he played a lot of second base over the last year and a half. But I think they see him as a versatile player. You know, if he can become a guy like what Ben Zobrist has been throughout his career and move all over the park and offer up versatility, that's modern baseball. You know, a lot of times you just have guys that fill in a position when you need it based on injuries, based on pitching matchups or whatever. Gives your manager a lot of different options. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. So the Jays are most certainly a better team today than they were at the end of last season. And that's all you can ask for. Keep growing, keep growing. Got to add some pitching, but they probably still have some more money to spend at some point down the road. So
I want to ask George Springer what the rule is on buying the new teammates dinner. Like, does he have the cachet to say, I don't even know you guys, like, I don't need to get you dinner? Or, you know, if you're with the guys for a bunch of years, you're like, let's go offer a new dinner, new contract, big money.
Yeah.
I got like 150 sheets, man. Dude. Largest contract in team history.
Yeah,
you got to hook up something. Something's got to come in.
Dude, that's a new weird. That's a new car per every guy in the team.
That's what I'm thinking. Forget dinner, man. You got to upgrade on top of that.
SUV. Yeah.
Absolutely. George Springer in just over an hour. James Duthie will join us in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.